I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to discuss summer learning. We're going to talk about ways to keep students engaged and their minds active during those months when school is not in session. We'll talk about where to go and what to do to keep brains from taking a siesta during the summer. We'll discuss all of this with three guests: Earl Phelan of Summer Advantage USA, Leanne Harris of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis, and Chris Cairo of the Indianapolis Public Library. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to chatting with you. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about summer learning. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Fortunate to have three great guests today, starting with Earl Phelan, who is with Summer Advantage USA. Earl, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. It's wonderful to be here today.
It's good to have you here. Leanne Harris, who is with Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis. Leanne, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Oh, certainly. It's my pleasure. And Chris Cairo, who is with the Indianapolis Public Library. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks very much. Well, I want to start here. We assume, and I'm assuming that you know, if there are students who are out there right now, they're going to say, "Summer learning. I thought summer was a time we didn't have to do this stuff. That, you know, we get to not worry about school." Let's talk a little bit. Let's set the table and talk a little bit about why it's important. Earl, I'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, there's 100 years of research that says that summer's important. One, because children lose academic skills about 2 months if they're not reading and writing and computing. Second is many of our children get their two healthy meals a day from their schools. And so many of our children, unfortunately, go hungry during the summertime. And then the third reason is a lot of children, because of community conditions, can't go out and play. And so they're stuck inside watching TV and playing video games with older sibling, taking care of younger sibling. And we just need children to have an opportunity to engage and to stay physical during the summertime.
How much of this has been quantified, the damage that, you know, the learning loss over the summer months?
It seems like I was just reading through a study last week from the National Summer Learning Association. But studies have been done through the years that show, and I think Earl was referring to community resources, that our kids and families who have fewer resources actually experience much greater learning loss, where kids who have more resources actually continue to gain through the summer, just at a much slower rate. So it becomes even more critical that we have programs and opportunities and resources and academic enrichment, things that are fun to do, as you alluded to in your introduction, to keep those kids engaged who have the fewest resources.
Hey, how much of this is a class situation? I mean, it sounds like what we're saying is that those students who you come from families of some means who have you know, the opportunity to do intellectually stimulating things during the summer get inherently a significant advantage as a result of that. Earl Phelan.
Yeah, well, there's one study that says that upper-income families are now spending about 8 times more and out-of-school time to support their children. So the camps, the trips, The exposures during the day, the workshops, the tutoring, all that is things that parents are paying for because they understand that during the summertime you can't leave your child idle. You can't have that brain, that muscle, go unused for 3 months and not expect it to atrophy. So we're seeing it as a class issue because a lot of our families don't have the resources, and quite frankly, oftentimes there's not enough high-quality learning opportunities for children in our communities.
Chris Cairo, I mean, the library, obviously, though, is designed to be an equalizer to level the playing field in that regard, in that everyone's got access to the library.
That's right. It's a beacon of light in every neighborhood here in Indianapolis. We have a branch library in Center Township every mile, so anybody can walk there. In the outer ring, that's every 3 miles, and our suburban areas is every 5 miles. So we've made a very deliberate attempt to make sure that we have a neighborhood branch in every neighborhood. And as everybody knows, it's absolutely free, just for the price of coming in and registering for a library
card. And getting a card. What sort of programs do you do during the summer? Are there summer-specific programs that you use to try to engage these students who are not getting the stimulation that they should?
Well, it's a very rich summer menu, and we offer all of these programs at all of our branches. And probably the biggest program, it's in its 98th year, so.
Oh, so you're still in the pilot phase.
Yeah. So I think we can say we've had some success with it. I think probably everybody here sitting around the table has participated in a summer reading program. So it is an opportunity during the summer to practice your reading skills and to do it in a fun way, because we're not just trying to develop reading skills, we're trying to develop the joy of reading. And, you know, it's our philosophy that if you can learn to love to read, you don't have to worry about learning to read, because it'll be a lifelong skill.
We are talking about summer learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've established here that this is important, you know, that there are, to summarize, what I'm hearing is that a lot of the gains we might make during the school year get lost if we let people take time off during the summer. So there's a stop loss mm-hmm. aspect to this. But then there are also, because many families, particularly those families of means, don't take the summer off, or their children don't, it creates a kind of achievement and skills gap, too, that we need to address and create some disparities in opportunity then across the board. So we've established it's a problem. What do we do about it? Earl Phelan.
Well, I think you can have a range of things that you can do about it. You can send your child to great programs like the Boys and Girls Club or 100 Black Men or the YMCA. So they're great organizations, Summer Advantage, great organizations that parents can enroll their children in, often at no cost or at very, very low cost. And so that's for me, that's one of the best options for children. But I also think if that's not an option, as was shared, there's a library. If somebody can escort you to the library, you have the library as an option. Sure. Quite frankly, many of our families now have technology and have smartphones. You can get access to programs like Khan Academy that will help you wherever you are, will help you with your math skills and develop your math skills. There are wonderful online programs that are game-based that help you develop your math and literacy skills. So there's a range of options that you have to keep your child learning, and there are a dozen other ones as well.
Leanne, what's the best way to solve this problem? Give me a first step. If I've got a child and I'm of very limited means, what do I do?
I would say ask for help. Your schools certainly can refer you to lots of free resources and agencies like the ones that Earl just referred to. They can help you identify things within your community. Things as simple as we've done training with some of the IPS staff development people who have taught our staff how to teach kids scientific concepts using rocks. And I can't think of a single person who can't walk outside and find a rock. So there are things that each of us can do. It's just a matter of being willing to ask for the help and the resources to find out how to do that.
That's right. Well, let's talk about this. You know, my children actually always get at their school summer reading lists. My daughter loves them. My son, on the other hand, reacts as if you know, I were telling him, oh,
you know, let's go to the doctor's office and have a series of shots for fun. So how do we get past that? I'm exaggerating a little bit, actually. Mm-hmm. He does read quite a bit, but his enthusiasm is not at the level of my daughter's. Chris, how do I go about breaking that down, that resistance?
Well, the summertime is an opportunity to read for pleasure. And so you need to practice those reading skills. You're never going to become an NBA star if you don't practice, you know, shooting baskets out in your driveway.
Which is what he would prefer.
Well, of course. You're never going to get good at reading if you don't practice reading skills. So now we're saying, how do we make that a pleasurable experience as shooting baskets outside? And I think that one of the ways that we do it effectively is that we have an incentive-based reading program. That when you read and sign up, the more books you read, the more points you received, and then you're able to spend those points for incentives, not just trinkets, but also passes for your family to attend a baseball game, to attend a bowling, you know, party. There are plenty of opportunities for you to empower you by reading to do something for your family. In addition to that, we have an incentive this year that you can earn books in free books, and then you can donate them back that we're giving to the Crystal House International in Africa and in Mexico, as well as Brazil. We're sending those over there to the kids. And so it's an opportunity to have to realize that by reading, you can empower and help your family, but you can also, because it's an altruistic experience, that you can give back to the community.
And John, the USA Today says that the average parent non-command talks to their child for less than 5 minutes per day. So just the notion of talking to your child and engaging in conversation,
rather than telling them what to do.
And then always telling them what to do and them saying yes or no or whatever they'll say. But engaging in real conversation is a simple tool that anybody can do on the bus, at home, at dinner, at lunch, or what have you. So talking to your children is another important step. And then obviously getting your children to write, whether it's an email or a letter to a friend, is another skill that will help promote reading skills.
You know, I'd like to add to that, because mm-hmm. I think that's really a good point, Earl. But a way for you to have a conversation together is to pick up a book and read it together.
Absolutely.
You can, and it doesn't matter if you're 2 years old, 10 years old, or 15 years old, to sit down together and to share a book out loud can really be a great bonding experience. And people comprehend beyond their reading ability. Mm-hmm. So you're learning new vocabulary and you're learning content in context. So it's an opportunity if something happens in the story and there is a moment when you're confused or upset about it, you can talk about it. You know, it gives you an opportunity to have something to talk about.
And it
about.
Helps you bring the characters to life if it's a fiction,
and,
you know.
And you never forget a book that is read to you. I mean, we can go around the room mm-hmm. here and everybody can remember where they were when somebody sat down and read a book aloud to them. It's a powerful tool and it doesn't cost a penny.
We are talking about summer learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Dee, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Dee.
Yes,
what's on
yes,
your mind? Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I was jolted into reality listening to the program when someone a while ago was talking about how many libraries there are and how accessible they are to the children. They're in walking distance and all this. And it infuriated me, not because I think that we shouldn't have libraries within walking distance of children, but because many, many years ago, I lived over by 38 and Post Road, and I'm talking about the late 60s and the early 70s, a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I live in Lawrence now, but I don't live right in that area. But I do know that back in the 70s, there was a library at 38th and Post Road, and there was one even about a mile away over at Franklin Road and Pendleton Pike. This area that I'm speaking of is called Northeast Wood, and it is inundated with Section 8 apartment complexes. There are thousands of families. It's now a high crime area, and I will tell you that it was either in the late 70s or the early 80s, they pulled those libraries out, closed them down, and the closest library is one down in Warren Township where people drive to the library, and the other one is up at 82nd and Post and Hague Road, which is Castleton. There is no library if you would go from German Church Road clear over to Shadeland, all the way from 21st Street up to 56th Street. There's nothing for these people here, and I used to take my children over from the time that they could sign their name when they were like 4 years old to get their library cards.
I know. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks
for saying
thanks.
Something.
Yeah, thank
you. It breaks my heart.
Well, no, let me tell you that there was a branch library, and it was there, and we only closed one, but it was an important branch, and I wasn't actually part of that decision at that time, but our thought was that the philosophy was if you build a larger branch that, you know, people can get to it. And you have identified an area that needs a branch library. So I thank you for that. We are well aware of it. We're in the middle of a strategic plan right now. So if you're interested in participating, we'll be coming out probably to the Lawrence branch and come on over and share your opinion with us, because we know that that is an area where we need additional service. So thank you for bringing that up.
As we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about summer learning. My guests are Earl Phelan of Summer Advantage USA, Leanne Harris of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis, and Chris Cairo of Indianapolis Public Library. Just before the break, Dee called and talked about libraries closing in some areas. We've talked also about the explosion of technology. I think Earl's made reference to this, and we've seen libraries are having to change their mission. We're seeing bookstores closing all over the place. In terms of this sort of changing, you know, information accessing and delivery environment that we are in, does that make the challenge of you know, having students learn things during the summer easier or harder? I'll start with you, Earl.
Sure. I mean, I think it can have both effects. I think with technology, you know, a lot of kids just want to play Angry Birds, right? So you think they're reading, but they're actually playing a video game. So that makes it really challenging. And it just requires parents to be more diligent about, if you have a rule about the amount of TV time, now it's a rule about amount of screen time that you have during the day, whether that's on an iPad or on a phone or in front of a regular television. So I think that's a challenge. But there is a huge upside opportunity in the access that you have to engaging content, engaging content in terms of educational programs and games that can really help parents who may not have the skills themselves take their children to a much higher place.
Chris, how is it changing what you folks have to do with the library?
Our approach.
You guys are
library.
In a revolution, basically.
Well, for one thing, we have more computers for public use than anywhere in this city. We have hundreds and hundreds of them. So, yes, it's a big part of our thinking and what we're trying to do. More and more people are accessing information via the computer. But our approach has been not just to help people access information, but teach them how to use digital tools and how to access that information intelligently, that everything they see on the Internet's not great. And if they have a certain need, we can help them to access it. We're also beginning to combine literacy and technology together into our programming. We're even doing programs we call Digital Littles for our preschoolers.
What's that?
Well, we have there are electronic toys out there now. We have a dinosaur named Pleo, and the more that you engage with him, the smarter he gets. And there, we might have kids, our preschoolers.
Would that that worked in real life? <That's okay. laughs>
I just want to mention that we have that our story hours are not just sit and read story hours now, that we also use technology. We might tell a story, then have the children act it out, videotape it, send it home, you know, via email to the parents and grandparents. Everybody can take a look at it. So we're using the technology to help engage children with literacy. And I don't think it's one or the other anymore. It goes hand in hand. And to our digital natives, it's seamless to them. To them, it's just a format. They don't care. They just need the information.
Oh, my daughter, you know, will read on her iPad or Kindle or whatever the technology is, or pick up a book, and for her, they're, you know, it's interchangeable.
Right.
It really does not make a difference. Yeah. It's the words that matter. So.
Well, and you know, we have many ebooks. We're heavily into offering ebooks for free that you can download and read. I hesitate to mention here we're talking about summer learning. There aren't quite as many children's books available yet, but it's coming.
Mm-hmm. In part because it tends to be more of a visual medium, and that the whole thing doesn't, you know, the art doesn't communicate quite as effectively.
And children do love to read books over and over and over again, which is
like
a wonderful thing to do. Yes.
Yeah. Leanne, and, you know, in terms of what the boys and the girls clubs do, I mean, my association, the boys club, when I was a kid, was a place you went to get physical activity. I mean, you go play basketball or do whatever, but your mission has evolved to some degree as well, and you're looking for opportunities to provide more intellectual stimulation.
Absolutely, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about that, because I think a lot of people still remember us as what we kindly call the swim and gym, when the boys' club and our motto was that we were the club that beats the streets, or we were known as the safe place for kids to go and get off the street. You know, we've spent a lot of time really reexamining that mission and thinking about our local mission here in Indianapolis, which is to help our young people reach their fullest potential. And our staff really sat down and took that to heart within just these past 4 or 5 years, really thinking about, you know, if we are going to help kids reach their fullest potential, what is our role in helping them be academically successful, and knowing that that is what will truly help them reach their fullest potential. So we've made some very, very dedicated, purposeful strides towards training and developing our staff, and being very intentional about our programming and increasing kids' academic success. Technology, as you referred to earlier, has been a great tool for our staff to really educate themselves, make themselves aware of the resources that are out there, and to utilize those resources in our clubs. One of our clubs this summer is in its second year as part of a professional learning community, where they're actually having the students log on with their school usernames and passwords and be able to continue their reading and math lessons through the Voyager system that they use in their school throughout the year. So it's right. also provided us with a great opportunity to just keep that learning moving throughout the summer. The last point I'd make about technology is that it's also given us a real purpose in what kinds of careers and education are we preparing young people for, and knowing that we also have to focus on that those STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math, as technology takes a larger and larger role in our society. So we're always looking for programs that do that.
We are talking about summer learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We focused an awful lot of this conversation so far on reading, and that's appropriate. But I think Earl's pointed out there are other ways to stimulate children, stimulate intellectual activity. One of the ways, pretty simple, you say, is, you know, have a conversation
That's
with
right.
your child that doesn't involve, you know, a direction or a command
orders.
Or a reprimand in some fashion. But are there other ways, for example, if you're planning a family vacation, are there ways that you can incorporate, make that a learning experience?
Yeah, I mean,
as well?
I think there are 100 different ways. I mean, Chris mentioned it, in the household, having the children put on a play. For you, that they have to think through and design, and that's the entertainment for the night. Our children, many of our children, they love music. So having them write a song and perform a song, that's building their vocabulary skills. Michael Bitz, Dr. Michael Bitz, has a comic book project that allows children to build comic books. Just getting children to do what's fun, but also obviously we know is going to build up those base skills. But you mentioned it, you can go to the grocery store and count the number of items, or ask, what's the change going to be if this costs $17.22 and we gave them a 20? So there are all sorts of ways that you can engage children in learning and keep their minds active.
I think it's good to remember that as a parent, you are your child's first and your best teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, they look up to you as a role model. They want to be like you. And in any time that you can spend time with them that has to do with learning, they're going to be responsive to it, because they want to spend time with you. So And you're right, it can be anything. It can be reading a book together, it can be doing a play, going to the grocery store. Just stay engaged with your child and make it a fun experience. And, you know, not the child will be rewarded, but you as a parent will be rewarded, too, because you'll just be having a positive interaction with your child.
Is a sort of a bartering system? I'm trying to, you know, and I'm asking this question not out of professional curiosity, but personal curiosity in this case, because, you know, particularly with my son. He right now is completely obsessed with baseball, mm-hmm. so we will spend weekends where we go to see, you know, a couple of minor league baseball yep. games and a major league game or something, mm-hmm. wherever there are towns, and I'll say, okay, I'll do three baseball games with you if we do at least one museum during the trip, too, or one, you know, one library, something like that mm-hmm. that has some heft, and of course he'll grumble all the way through the museum, but... Is that an appropriate strategy, or am I making learning seem like it's a chore, which is what I worry about?
I think incentives are great and motivate a lot of young people, but I think you really touched on earlier, as several of us have, how important the word fun is in learning and keeping learning fun. I think that's one of the things that's helped with the transition in our organization is because we were always a fun place, and certainly we don't want to take the fun out of the Boys and Girls Club, so we've managed to try to maintain that and incorporate academic enrichment. I was at a club earlier this week and watched a group of teenagers cooking, you know, preparing stir fry, and they're studying Asia this week at that club. Saw the 5 to 8 year olds in another room learning about different Asian cultures and just recognizing that there's more than one. So we just find ways to do it in a playful way, in a fun way. And I would say if you're dealing with your own individual child and you know what their interests are, then think about how you build on those interests, whether it's incorporating baseball cards and stats and some math, natural math lessons that occur there. Or, like you mentioned, budgeting for the trip to the stadium and how much the refreshments are going to cost there.
That's not a part I really want to think about.
I think if you have that passion, then you should capitalize it and run with it and use that as your foundation and your base for learning and not worry about whether or not that the experience has enough heft to it. Because they will find the learning in it if you provide the guidance for them, because that's what they're enthusiastic about. That's where their passion lies. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of biographies about baseball players that I'm sure your son would be happy to read. You're right about all the math skills. The two of you can really get into some of the statistics and doing the math computations and all of that that goes along with it.
Oh, it's amazing, you know, when you see... And the motivation there is so important. It's like the old the joke from the old Mary Tyler Moore show when Ted Baxter couldn't do math until you put a dollar sign in front of it and he operated with calculated precision. You know, if there's a baseball or basketball statistical angle to solving the math problem, my son is incredibly motivated to do all of that. But I guess the other thing that I would say, and I think I know what the answer is going to be, but is the fact that a child is reading or doing something more important than what that child reads or learns. I mean, we shouldn't be prescribing.
Yes, yes, and yes. Yes, yes. I don't care if they're reading the back of the cereal box. What's really important is that they're reading. And if you can enrich that reading experience by being engaged yourself, by reading the back of the cereal box together and talking about it and asking questions, it's not only that you're building those building blocks of reading skills, and they're beginning to comprehend and add context, but you are engaged and they have your attention. And that's what they want more than anything else, is to have you engaged and have their attention. I mean, it's that simple and complicated.
Until they hit the teen years.
I would argue even the teen years. I know. I raised a couple of kids, too. I remember. But, no, I still think it's a good rule of thumb. And as soon as you start worrying about whether it's a learning experience, I think you've kind of lost the impact of the situation. It's no longer fun.
So just do what? Should you try to come to them at their level? You know, if they're, you know, my son will read, actually. He will read the collected works of Mike Lupica or all of the sports-themed books right now. Is it important, you know, as a parent, that you read the same stuff, too? I'll start with Leanne on that one.
I think it enriches the experience because it gives you something to talk about, like Chris alluded to. It gives you the common experience and shows that you're really invested in your child's learning, and whether they consciously acknowledge that or not, I think that lesson is imparted with them. If not, and you simply can't bring yourself to reread Clifford the Big Red Dog over and over and over to your, you know, with your younger child, to be able to have something to be able to expand upon what they're reading and help take that learning just a little bit further.
And I guess, John, what I'd add to that is, you know, 20 to 30 million American adults cannot read. Mm-hmm. So reading can't be the only solution for parents. And that's why I think it's so important, if we want to make this a real inclusive conversation, it's so important to say a child, you can have your child read to you. Mm-hmm. You can ask questions, because our parents are smart. You can ask questions about what's being read and have conversation about what's being read. Or you can also, with the younger children's book, you can look at pictures and make up the story as you go through it. You don't have to read word for word. A one-year-old doesn't know what you're reading. So you can look at the pictures and make up stories as you go along. So we really have to kind of, as you said, we have to meet our families where they're at in addition to meeting our children where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think some, I know from the studies I've seen that, you know, the single most important factor that they say whether a child will learn to read and come to love reading is if he or she sees parents reading.
Yep.
Even if they're not reading to the children, they just need to see, okay, this is behavior that is important. How vital is it that you create that kind of environment, have books in the house and show them that this is a part of your life as well, or I'll stay with you.
Well, I mean, I think it's critically important. And again, I don't think it matters what parents read, because I'm not going to exclude 30% of our parents from being able to be successful at this. Mm-hmm. There are great programs like Reach Out and Read that work through pediatricians and give a brand new book at every well-child visit so families can start to build up their own home libraries. There's obviously the library, as Chris mentioned, where families can go. But it can be a magazine, it can be Vogue, it can be Sports Illustrated, it can be... But if they do see that and witness that, or you take the time to say, hey, read to me while I do the dishes, that underscores how you think it's important and how you value their education and their growth.
We are talking about summer learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I think everybody probably is persuaded that this is important now. What are the obstacles? Chris Cairo.
Well, I think in the formative years, a child is definitely influenced by a parent, and whatever the parent is interested in, the child's going to be interested in it. So you get a generation of kids who love NASCARs because dad loves NASCARs. Mm-hmm. I think that the biggest challenge is for parents to be well aware that their child is watching and is paying attention to what they value. And so whatever you value, whether it be positive or negative, that child's going to value it too. So to me, the risk is, you know, taking your eye off the ball as a parent and just forgetting for a minute that you are the best influence, whether you like it or not, that your child is watching what you're doing and saying and thinking. So if you can get engaged, make sure there's books in the house, then that becomes important to your child. And make sure that you there's a, you know, book under the tree at Christmas, and that you have opportunities to engage with the child in positive ways.
How much of this, though, is the challenge also that, you know, we're still operating off of a 19th century agricultural model in terms of educating children too, and saying, in effect, okay, school is for fall, winter, spring, and really, once we start getting into spring, it's time to go out and, you know, plant, even though we don't most of us really don't do that anymore.
That's true. It's our agrarian model of a 9-month, 180-day calendar is completely backwards. The evidence, as we've talked about, our children are losing 3 months reading, writing, and math skills. Even upper-income children lose math skills during the summer, even though they have a slight gain in reading. So basically, you're investing for 9 months to have this growth, and then all children are backsliding. It's a waste of public tax dollars, and somebody's got to have the courage, particularly given the fact, John, that right now Georgetown released a study, 63% of new jobs that allow you to take care of your family are going to require a Bachelor of Arts. Do you know in America, this is rich and poor, but middle-class families, 26% of children are actually graduating from four-year colleges. There's not going to be any opportunities for children unless we start to understand the urgency of educating our children to their highest potential.
We're talking about summer learning here on No Limits, and as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and TV stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about summer learning today on No Limits. My guests are Earl Phelan, who is with Summer Advantage USA, Leanne Harris, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis, and Chris Cairo, the Indianapolis Public Library. Right before the break, we were talking about whether this model of saying, in effect, that school is not a summertime activity, that structured education, you know, if we're really going to solve this problem of those skills atrophying over the course of that 2.5 to 3 month mm-hmm. period, do we need to change the educational model, make it a year-round experience? Earl Phelan.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of districts are playing games where they're still taking 180 days and just allocating them differently, and all the early research says, yes, that reduces the summer learning loss, but the loss during those long vacations and the summer adds up to be about the same. So when you look at the countries that are whooping us, Singapore, Korea, et cetera, you go down the list of the countries that are beating us in math, literacy skills, and science, they most of them actually have longer years, 200 to 225-day school years, not longer days. And so we need to adjust the calendar, have longer years, and kind of bite the bullet with the financial implications, understanding this investment will secure America as being a great country.
Are there stopgap measures that we could use? Stopgap's a poor phrase.
Sure.
But are there sort of intermediate measures we could take other than completely rewriting? Because at some level, I'm asking a question about what do we do in a perfect world, but I think we all recognize we don't live in a perfect world. What's politically feasible? What could we do during these summer months to make sure that we don't lose those gains?
There's such a broad nonprofit community that's trying to be a partner to school districts, and so maybe Leanne can talk about that, but I think that's one short-term solution.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Earl. I think that out-of-school time providers are definitely recognizing the need to step up and take a more active role in the academic success of kids, not just the Boys and Girls Club, but lots of after-school programs. We're really looking at the quality of the programs that we provide and how we enrich kids academically. The Indiana After School Network's created a great tool to allow out-of-school time providers to take a look at their programs and evaluate the quality and really increase that. So,
what motivated you to the Boys and Girls Clubs to shift in that direction?
It really was, we sat down with all of our staff, top to bottom, in one room about 3.5 years ago, and looked at our mission statement and asked each staff member to picture one child that they saw every day and to think about that child growing up from the age of 5 to 18, spending each afternoon at our clubs, and ask our staff to think about what kind of an impact did they want to say they'd had on that child's life as they left us at the age of 18, and to write all those ideas down. And basically the staff came back and said they wanted them to finish school, they wanted them to be able to get a good job, to give back to their community, to live long, healthy, prosperous lives. And so once we knew that, it was just a matter of saying, what do we do to make that happen? How does that look? And where do we have the most room for growth? Mm-hmm. So
we've gotten an email from a listener named Janine who says, and I think everybody will like this, my 8-year-old reads to our cats and also to her dolls and stuffed animals. She loves to do that, but I'm assuming that's a healthy sign,
that's
right?
Awesome.
Chris Cairo?
Great. Yeah.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that our canine friends can be an excellent opportunity for children who are shy and reluctant readers to read aloud to a dog who is in no way judgmental or won't correct them if they make a
pronunciation
mistake.
Pronunciation or anything
exactly.
like that. Yeah.
I think it can be very effective, and we do programming that actually we bring in therapy dogs that will sit and listen to children read. So it's very effective. She's right on target.
And if you get a stuffed animal, you don't even have to take them outside.
Worry about the reaction or anything like that. We are talking about summer learning here on No Limits. Caroline, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to speak with you.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment and reinforce how important it is to keep these children away from too much of unregulated screen time. I'm 18 years old, and I babysit for a multitude of families. And it's really interesting to me that the development of these children, I've noticed, isn't necessarily correlated with the income of the families or how wealthy they are. There's this one child I babysit for who his parents bought him an iPad. And when I'm babysitting for him, we're engaged in activities, but I can tell the minute I leave, he is on Netflix all the time on that iPad. And it's a problem when I'm babysitting because he constantly wants to be watching that Netflix. Whereas I can tell with these other kids I babysit for their parents are with them throughout the day. You know, maybe they go to a summer camp or something, and they're much more up to speed and easy to talk to. They're developing really, really quickly. So I just thought that was really interesting, and I really agree with that.
Thanks very much for the call, Caroline. Well, and that's the dilemma there, I think, and I think I speak for a lot of parents is that obviously, you know, electronic media are going to be part of our world. That kind of technology is here now, so isolating your child completely from it isn't a realistic option, at least in my mind. Mm-hmm. I'll declare that. I know there are people who feel differently, and I respect their views. But on the other hand, all of the studies show that in some of this stuff, there's less brain stimulation than if you're asleep. So, what line should we walk here? Earl Phelan.
Yeah, I go right back to parents have to set limits. And whether that limit, obviously it needs to be age appropriate, but whether that limit the American Academy of Pediatrics says for children under 3, there should be no screen time, period. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of come out very strongly. And then I think if you think about age appropriate limits with access to technology, because again, social skills, you know, people think they have friends on Facebook. You don't have 4,000 friends. You don't. You may have 3 or 4 people that you can sit down and talk to that will hold your stuff in confidence, that you'll hold in confidence. So that whole notion of kind of not hiding behind technology but actually engaging has to happen. And I think if you limit the technology, then children are going to find they're either going to be really bored or they're going to use their imaginations do more productive things.
Or another way to look at it is they love the screen time. Mm-hmm. They engage with the technology and love it. And I would suggest perhaps that we just pay attention more to what they're doing. There is mm-hmm. tons and tons of educational internet sites out there. There are opportunities for you to be, to use technology in mm-hmm. creative ways. And maybe not always the iPads and the computers, get the camera out and go and see what you can see and take pictures and spend time together. It's still a form of technology. Yep. The kids are still engaged in ways they can be creative. Mm-hmm. But it's another, so instead of forbidding, the technology, which you're right, it's unrealistic to think that's going to happen, try to use the technology creatively, and I think that can make a big difference.
The only challenge with that is if you have multiple children, unless you're standing over their shoulders watching exactly, it is one click away to be watching Netflix to get to, I'm working on my math problems. So that's the challenge for multiple children. But I agree, technology obviously can be an asset.
Is there a different, and I've got to admit, I'm asking this question out of out of ignorance. But now that, you know, the way we read has changed, we've talked about the, you know, the electronic readers and all of that, the e-readers. Is there anything that, does that count towards screen time? Does that, have we seen that, you know, there's a difference in reading something in the traditional, you know, paper format as opposed to on a screen, Earl?
I think the Academy of Pediatrics would say, yes, that does count as screen time. So it's any screen time. It should be banned for a child who's under 3 years old. I think we don't know yet. We don't know what the effects. Obviously, there's a tactile thing that you learn when you learn how to turn a page. You understand weight balance when you hold a book. We don't know how that's going to be impacted now by holding a virtual book. That's the Odyssey, versus a virtual book.
Oh, yeah, War and Peace now weighs 2 ounces.
Exactly. But, yeah. So I don't think it's too early, and we better study it.
We've gotten a question from or a comment from a listener who didn't want to go on the air and said that he feels that year-round school is ineffective for teachers because teachers in public school do need a break. Public school teaching doesn't pay very well for year-round schooling. A traditional calendar can work much better for teachers and then in turn students. It also helps parents and children who need to take a break from a busy year of balancing work and school. There is a downside to year-round school. Earl, I'll let you respond to that one.
Well, my first comment is, it's happening in many other countries, and nobody's getting burnt out, and it's working effectively. The second thing is, we would absolutely pay teachers more. We're right now paying them for 180 school day a year. If you went 200, you'd pay them more, and hopefully we can pay them even more because they have one of the hardest jobs and one of the most important jobs in this country. So that's kind of what I would respond to. Yes, there are logistical pieces, but there's nothing in history that says countries stay atop. Mm-hmm. There's, in fact, everything in history that says countries tumble, and we are not looking at the data that's saying we're beginning to tumble pretty hard, and we better turn it around, and education is one way to do that.
To be fair to the listener's point, though, they say that there is sort of a restorative function to having that time off that allows them to recharge the batteries.
Yeah, and I'm saying 225 days. I'm not saying 360 days or 365 days. I'm saying let's just extend it by about a month or 40 days of learning time, and that will help us. That will help our children reduce the loss and allow teachers to restore themselves and allow teachers to get the pay that they deserve.
Chris.
I do believe, I hear what Earl is saying, and I think I'm ambivalent about it, but I do believe that there are other ways we should be looking at to improve the way we're educating our children. WFYI has shown a great movie called The Finland Phenomenon that I think is very provocative, and I think that we can learn a lot from that country and the methods that they have used to educate children. One thing that we can do is maybe a teacher needs to follow children through more than one grade. You know, they take a look at the way we're structuring that. They learn, the teacher learns a great deal about that child, and the child depends on that teacher. They build a relationship. At the end of the school year, they move on to the next year, and they have a new teacher and have to start all over again. Maybe we should be looking at that and rethinking the way we're doing and not just focus on whether or not kids are going to school during
the
summer.
But there's such a resistance to innovation. I mean, let's go back 100 years to 1913. What other business, what other approach looks the exact same in 2013 than it looked in 1913, right? Nothing does. Cars don't look the same. Phones don't look the same. Typewriters don't look the same. I mean, no other business has been so reluctant and so resistant to innovate and change based on solid research that says our children need more.
But there are models out there nationally we can be looking at in making changes if we choose to.
Well, and some of it seems to me also that using the caller's question as a jump off, just because a teacher or teachers need some recharging time doesn't necessarily mean that the school itself has to shut down too. That there you could do this in kind of a platoon system too, where people have time off. Or is that? Is that, fair? You're shaking your head, Chris.
Well, and I don't have any data to back this up or anything, so Earl can probably speak to this. But my first reaction is, it goes back again to saying that, that anybody can be a child's teacher and just make sure, it begins to sound like a babysitting situation and not necessarily active, fully supported learning. So I would say I don't think that's the answer.
I would just say, what's the reality? What do most teachers do during the summer? They go get a job. Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah. it's not, I mean, now it may be a different job than being direct with children. Leanne, I interrupted you. So.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, I think there are so many ways that we could look at reforming the education system in ways that make the load easier for teachers or more enjoyable, whether it's smaller classroom mm-hmm. sizes, whether it's engaging in more interactive learning, whether it is staying with the same group of students. I think that there are so many different possibilities for educational reform that to simply look at the calendar year as a solution is, mm-hmm. is probably not wise.
Mm-hmm. Mary Ann, I understand you want to get in on this conversation. Thanks for the call.
Wonderful show from everyone. Thank you so much. I'm having an interesting firsthand experience this summer due to circumstances beyond our choosing. My incoming fifth grader did have to switch schools for this last school year quite suddenly. And she had, the last 3 years, had been on the kind of a calendar that I believe that Mr. Phelan's talking about, where she had about 6 weeks off in the summer and extended long vacations during the school year, which we thought that we liked. The school that she has ended up at has a very traditional calendar with 2 weeks off at Christmas and a full 3 months off the summer. So she's been out of school since before Memorial Day. She will return actually after Labor Day. And we're finding this summer to be wonderful for her because she has so much time. And she has a sense of time and the ability to plan things herself and initiate them and to plan projects. And in case you might be thinking we're speaking of the very high-achieving suburban child, we're actually speaking of a child who has struggled to learn to read, who's doing fairly well now, mainly due to her hard efforts and her teacher's hard efforts. But the summer for her is a time to kind of put those skills together that she's learned during the school year and to learn how to use them in projects and how to use them as she initiates things herself. And she's growing so much through that.
Thanks very much for the call, Mary Ann. Well, some of what Mary Ann's saying, too, is that, we could think of the summer as a time to, sort of consolidate gains as well. Are there strategies we can use to do that? Earl, I'll stay with you.
Sure. I mean, I'm glad the caller shared that. I mean, I think that, I'm talking at the system level mm-hmm. of what I think the reform should be, but she's clearly given an example for her child that wouldn't work for her child, and this has been a much better approach. I think that there's a summer youth fund here in Indianapolis, a consolidation of all the major funders who focus on summer learning, and they do it as one united front. And I think if we could get more dollars into the summer learning fund, then you could grow programs like the Boys and Girls Club mm-hmm. and other great summer learning programs so that children could do the project-based and non-traditional learning during the summertime. So that would be one of my recommendations.
How much of this challenge is about money? Do we not spend enough on stimulating children during the summer? Because that's the other thing is, as you pointed out, we'd have to pay teachers more. We'd have
right.
to do all kinds of stuff. Is this a financial challenge? Chris?
Well, certainly there's never enough money, and we could it's very costly, to help educate children and plan these activities during the summer, and there has to be guidance. You have to have qualified leaders in order to do that. So there is, I think that there needs to be more funding for it, absolutely.
We've got about 10 seconds apiece here, real quickly. What's one thing that we could do, if you're a parent, to increase your child stimulation during the summer? Chris,
well,
I'll start with you.
I think mine's the obvious one.
Go to the library.
Just come to the library and get a library card. And we have a great program, and I need to say Earn and Learn program. If you have debt on your library card, you can read off your debt this summer and get your library card back in good standing.
Okay. Leanne, I'm going to have to cut you down to about five
Sorry.
Seconds.
No, that's okay. Engage your child in some type of enriching activity.
And Earl, I'll let you have the last word.
Put them in a great program or just talk to them more.
Well, I want to thank all three of you. This has been a very, very stimulating hour, and I've learned a lot from you. We will be back next week. We will be back next week when, actually, I will not be here, but Eric Bradner will be sitting in for me. Please be nice to him. You have been listening to No Limits when we've been talking about summer learning. Thank you for joining us.